the vape trend just like nationally, like just was like kicking off. Like I don't even think Juul was out then. And I just realized like everybody's buying these vape juices for like $25. They're like $30 for like those 30 milliliter bottles. I'm like, I could probably make this one.
What's up, everybody? Armand here, back with another episode. Today's guest, we have Ben Heyman. Ben Heyman was a founder at Altitude, a drone tech company, until he left. And he has the most unique, interesting, and weird morning routine and new hobby that I've heard to date. And his reason for doing them is actually really important. And I really liked it. And I totally agree. We talk about how you can find the right routine for you, how he started and sold a vape juice company in high school, which was really interesting, and how to grow your pipeline on the sales side. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoy the Play Hard podcast. All right. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. Work hard, play hard. All right. Without further ado, what's up, Ben? How's it going?
What's up, Armand? Doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This is Ben Heyman. He was one of the founders over at Altitude before he sold out and went corporate. So we're going to get a really good experience, really good conversation about how that adjustment has been, kind of what lessons you've taken from that experience. And you did mention a little, you kind of want to get back in the startup game. So a little conversation on that. But real quick, yeah, you want to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and the journey into Altitude?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you nailed that on the head. Sold my soul to corporate. And we can definitely get into that a little bit. But just kind of from a background experience and then tapping into Altitude. I mean, I've kind of been an entrepreneur my whole life, right? I mean, it started off as lemonade stands as a kid. Like I think everybody should start off at to transitioning that into buying $1.50 hats, like cool San Diego hats. So, you know, that's where I'm from at the swap meet. And I, you know, kind of a more affluent community, they would, I'd sell them for like $10. So the margins were pretty good. So lemonade, transitioned to hats, transitioned to a vape juice company I started in high school, which I actually ended up selling. Nothing crazy, you know, nothing in the million, but sold that business off and then went to college here in Orange County and started Altitude with a couple buddies, which was a drone technology company, which eventually pivoted into online training for your drone Part 107 certification. I exited that. And now I'm in the, you know, big corporate sales world, healthcare, IT, and that's, you know, super high level what got me to where I am today.
Yeah. So first of all, drone technology is fascinating, but first we got to back up a little bit. You sold vape juice as a high schooler. Like, is that even legal? How did you do that? Like, tobacco and nicotine is 18. Yeah, not to put you on blast here, but what was that kind of story? I didn't know that.
That's a good question. That's a good question. So, and that was like almost the concern that I had at the time. So right in high school was like kind of like, or at least when I was in high school.
You went to
like
TP, right?
When the vape, Torrey Pines, yeah. All, you know, the vape trend just like nationally, like just was like kicking off. Like, I don't even think Juul was out then. It was like these like big vapes and, you know, high school was like the cool thing to do. And I just realized like everybody's buying these vape juices for like $25. They're like $30 for like those 30 milliliter bottles. I'm like, I could probably make this. So like, I just like watched some YouTube videos. I looked at the cost and it was like, it was so cheap to make. And these margins were so high.
Of course
it is. I'm like, I could just make it. I could just, you know, make it myself and then sell it to my friend, which I started doing with a buddy. And we were like 17, maybe 16 and a half at the time. And we just tried it. Like, we made three flavors. We didn't bottle it. We had like, you know, some bottles. We didn't label it. And I was literally just, you know, I'm probably incriminating myself here, but was like literally selling it to my friends in the parking lot for $20, dude. And it cost a dollar to make. So we're like, all right, we're onto something here. It was before these like huge vape companies, yeah, you know, evolved, and, you know, they invested a lot of money into it. And we ended up like labeling it. It's called Seaside Vapor. We came out with three flavors, and we got into a couple of local vape shops. And that was actually like the start of like my like sales career. And my dad, you know, he actually was able to help me out a little bit. But I was like, I can't get any of these vape shops to buy the juice. Like what should I do? Because, you know, we weren't a name brand or anything. And
yeah,
I ended up just, I brought in like 90 bottles and I'm like labeling these myself. Like we're literally sitting in a garage, like pumping nicotine.
That's insane, dude.
And I drop it off and I'm like, hey guys, like take this. If you sell it, you pay me. Like it's on consignment. Like it's free.
Yeah.
You know, here you go. And I'll stop back in a couple weeks and three shops picked it up and I'd come back and I'd pick up a check every 2 weeks and, you know, kept selling it to friends in the parking lot. And then I just kind of realized I wanted to get out of that industry.
Yeah.
Not that it wasn't successful, but wanted to go on to learn some other stuff. But yeah, that was first like real incorporated venture on paper. And being 17, it was, you know, there's no licenses or structure or anything. So I was okay.
Yeah. So you were incorporated, like it was a legit, you had the company running and everything.
We had an LLC, we had like an equity structure and it was just a partner and I, and I mean, it was great experience. I mean, that was like, I mean, just learning how to do that basic stuff. And, you know, at 17 years old, it's like what formed me to be able to, you know, make the next jump.
Yeah. That's so funny that it started with vape juice, from lemonade juice to vape juice. Now what, so
all
that was,
juices.
Yeah, that was your kind of start, your foot in the door to actually getting legal and incorporated. So what happened when Altitude came along? What's the story behind that?
Yeah, so I was in college and I had a buddy that went to Torrey Pines. His name was Brandon, and we weren't really friends in high school. And I always knew he kind of had the entrepreneurial spirit, and we kind of became friends in college. He would drive up from San Diego and just crash at my place when, you know, in college, we'd party, he was working, I was in school, and he was at the time using drones to film residential real estate videos, right? You've probably seen
which
that.
Brandon. Okay. That sounds really familiar. Was he working? We can like also kind of edit these names out, but wasn't he working with those things?
Yeah.
Cause
so
I remember
Miles
seeing those videos.
Yep. So Miles was an original co-founder. We actually had four co-founders of Altitude, and then we kind of like restructured it when we moved on from that side of the business. But and if we kick back up, so he was filming that. And how I got involved was I was like, you know, I'm always looking for like little arbitrage opportunities.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, like I can get you jobs, just like give me a cut, you know, because I had I had just friends in real estate, friends of friends, family friends, and I was like, hey, you know, I'll get you some jobs, you know, can you go do this job in San Diego, because that's where he lived. And I started getting him like some just drone jobs, and I make like, I don't know, $75 a, you know, he'd go out and do it. I'd get a check and just like calling friends like, hey, you need some, you know, footage for your real estate. So that's how I got involved. That's how I met Brando. That's how we started working together. And then, you know, I got more involved in the company and kind of like the operational side, like the marketing side, like how we're actually obtaining new clients, got some, you know, equity. And we basically pivoted the company to leverage drone technology because that space got really commoditized, right? So we used to get like $400 to shoot a house, you know, 2 hours of work, a couple hours of editing, and like the margins were great. And as everybody kind of got a drone, right, in, you know, 2017, the prices started going way down. You know, people were only paying, you know, $100 for a job, and, you know, so we kind of wanted to move on. And the technology that was coming out with drones kind of led us to our next venture, which was a learning and kind of exploratory opportunity, which was using drone technology in like construction, agriculture, inspections for job sites, and like grading the ground. Like drones can do all these crazy things, and the software and the technology is brand new. So we like dove straight into that as a kind of pivot just to get out of that commoditized space, which wasn't, you know, funding the business as much at the time. And that's really kind of, you know, where the Altitude Aerial Services is what we called it, kind of picked up.
And it feels like you, like this pivot was kind of based on like the financial side of things. Like you just weren't growing and making as much money on the real estate side. But what kind of conversations and what discussions and what ultimately ended up on the deciding to pivot on this? It's a where you guys actually pick. So more on like the agriculture side, or help using drone tech to help like construction. How did that conversation happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. This is going way back in my memory. So like, I mean, that was like part of the fun of like having your own business, or at least like having a bigger vision than, you know, something you can work on for yourself every single day and like a team of people that you like. So like we would have like 14 to 16 hour work days, and these decisions were literally made by like four of us, like college dudes, not out partying, sitting in like a collaborative working space with cool whiteboards and desks and like our computers. And like, we're literally just like mapping out a vision for Altitude and all the directions we could possibly go. We tapped into commercial real estate first, like before that, you know, that was one of the first decisions we made, because we realized that working with a commercial residential real estate agent was a way better experience than a residential real estate agent. Just because of like the things they care about when they're selling their property, there's a lot less maintenance for commercial and the margins were the same, if not higher. So that was our first pivot. The second was, again, it's just whiteboard visionary, plus reading articles and data of what's physically possible with these drones. So we broke it out by those four industries, and each co-founder picked an industry to go research and see what true opportunity was there. So I was on the construction side. I thought there was a ton of opportunity there, which there was. And there's an ending to the story. And we actually, do you know the Great Park in Irvine?
No.
Got the big, big orange balloon. So it's a brand new development. It's huge. It got a water park, housing development, like 20.
I heard of that. I heard of the friends were telling me they went on a trip to go to a water park. I was like, where do we have them around here? And they're like, oh, there's one up in Irvine.
Yeah. So we actually went to that water park, but when they broke ground on that project, we actually got a contract with the developer on that.
Sweet.
Through basically like what I didn't know at the time was like a sales cycle. It's like we like walked into their boardroom, like had no idea what we were talking about, but that's, you know, half of sales is just faking it till you make it. And we ended up flying drones on like four phases of their construction project, and we mapped like the project in phases. So we'd fly like once a week, and then we did like layovers so they could drag and like see over time how their stuff has changed.
Oh wow.
And then like project managers could use it. You could run calculations. I don't know how accurate it was at the time. But we kind of just sold the vision of it to them. I don't know how useful they found it. They might've taken that data and just sold it off. I don't know. But that was really kind of how we broke ground in the construction space. Agriculture was kind of the same. Inspections were kind of the same, but yeah, that's kind of the story there of how we kind of, you know, made those pivots. And it was just kind of identifying market opportunity and taking a jump, like who really knew what would come of it. And, but you got to try or die trying.
Yeah, I love that. And now you mentioned a little bit about sales. Let's talk about your current sales role, but real quick, what led you to there? Like how did you decide it was time to go to move on? And then how did you end up getting this job? And we can go over how you're currently building the BDR team, which is a really awesome task.
Yeah, so the transition out was really, it wasn't because what we were doing wasn't working. It was more a personal decision to go get some big corporate experience that I might be able to leverage if I were to repeat the process that I did with Altitude, you know, hopefully here in the near future. And why I chose sales was because a couple things, right? What I was doing when I got Brandon those drone filming for houses, those gigs, right? That was a form of sales, right? I get to make phone calls and he goes out and does the project. I get paid, right? When we closed that deal with the developer, you know, we were presenting in board meetings. Like I didn't know any of this was sales. And I was like, that's probably like the closest thing to like an entrepreneur that you can do within any organization. And right after college, I had a job here at Experian. It was like a, you know, 9 to 5, 9 to 6 or whatever. And just wasn't for me. Like, you know, I wanted something that the harder that I worked, the more I was going to get paid and the more driven I would be. And if I stay till 7, 8, 9 PM, I'm going to get paid, you know, appropriately, but you know, in a traditional role, you know, you don't get those outcomes for the amount of work you put in. I mean, maybe you get a fun raise at the end of the year or a nice little bonus, but it didn't feel like I didn't have that grind or that like motivation to work hard.
Yeah, so the carrot like, gets a little shinier every year, but it's still not exactly enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people are happy with that. And it puts the food on the table and, you know, you go through the motions and you get to live a pretty good life. But I'm like, you know, I want something more than that. Yeah. So I got to go into sales. and I was already in the company. And like, that's usually the hardest part, is just to get your foot in the door. So I just started building a network, with the team downstairs in healthcare, you know, different business unit, grab lunch with the people, grab lunch, you know, met a lot of them, met the VPs, and a role opened up, and literally someone emailed me like, hey, apply to this. Went through the interview process and landed in an account executive role, you know, selling healthcare IT with no, you know, real corporate sales experience. So I actually skipped personally, like the BDR step, like the cold call, you know, set yeah. meetings for, you know, somebody like me, which I think was like a pro and a con. I think I kind of missed out on that phase of like, you know, sales cycle of like, you know, climbing the ropes. But, you know, the pro is like, obviously the experience that you get right off the bat and, you know, not knowing yeah. any of that and going to learn it. So I skipped that step and jumped right kind of to the top of, you know, where you could be before management in sales. And that's where I am now.
I think what's really important about the BDR role is you learn a skill that will always be necessary in sales, and that's prospecting. Your entire job is prospecting, is finding leads and like connecting with them and then passing them on to your sales team, growing that pipeline, as we like to say, pack and pipe.
Pipe, baby. I love that.
That's true. What really helped me from the corporate world, what they taught me the best was the importance of having systems and processes in place to efficiently run things. And I noticed that was really big at the current startup that I'm at. We're like currently in a phase where we have to iron out our current like systems and processes that started when we were younger. So like as the company matures, the kind of things that we did aren't really the ones that are going to take us to the next level. So we got to reestablish those. And that was like the corporate experience that I really appreciated, is seeing this like super established, you know, been around Fortune 100 multi-billion dollar company, how like locked in, how dialed their different processes are, and just like how the train just keeps moving with or without you. I thought that was like a really that's what, if I learned anything from my 2 years in corporate, like that was the most important thing.
Totally. It's like their processes are just, they're so like, and it's a pro and a con in my opinion, right? Like a big corporate process totally has its pros and its cons, because like, you know, they're not as easy, you know, it's not as easy to pivot like I could at Altitude, right? If a better idea, you know, something comes along, but you can also fall back to those, you know, processes that are working, you know, whether that's in sales and even their cross-functional processes, and just how big corporations make decisions is really what I came to learn and have learned and kind of been able to pull out. You know, kind of being a sponge here at a big company is how that's all worked. And I mean, you make a good point. And kind of from that prospecting perspective, you know, that's really what's driving these big companies is, you know, packing the pipe. And I skipped that step, but what was like, I think everything happens for a reason, right? So in this AE job or client executive role that I'm in, I don't leverage any BDR. So I'm actually responsible. I'm basically a one man shop. I am a BDR. So we could talk about prospecting, building the pipe, you know, how to send a text like email, cause no one's you know, reading four paragraphs anymore. You know, we could talk about that all day cause I'm living and breathing it. So, full cycle, right. You know, BDR to contract negotiation and close. So that was what I was able to like extract from being here.
And it seems like you've always kind of had that, even in your corporate job right now, you have that entrepreneurial spirit of like, I don't really like my job right now. I'm going to go look for another one and I'm going to make the opportunity for myself. Like you went out, you talked to the people in the health. Like that's not something most people like in the corporate life think of. They think like, this is my role. And I say this because I was in these shoes. Like you think this is my role. This is the way things are. That's just what it is. Like if I want a new job, I have to go to a new company or I have to change. Like, it really takes a different kind of mindset to go, no, the job's there, the opportunity's there. I just have to put myself and like present myself and leverage myself in an opportunity that, or in a way that opens that opportunity up. And I think you did a great job of that, of talking to that, to the other team, the healthcare team, and putting yourself in an AE role.
Yeah. I mean, you got to walk in and kick the door in, right? And if you can do that to build your network, I mean, that is sales, right? It's going and figuring out what's out there. It's finding that door that needs to be broken down. It was just a different door, right? It's a new job rather than a new prospect. But it's the same process, and your network's really going to get you there.
Yeah. And to change gears a little bit, we were talking earlier, yes, 2 days ago, getting ready for the show, and you said, I quote, you have a sick morning routine. What's a part of that sick morning routine?
Yeah, so I think you talked about, like, you talk about, like, habits and, like, yeah, morning routines. I listened to some of the episodes. I didn't go, like, super deep down or anything, but so I don't know what you've covered on previous episodes or what even you do. I'd love to hear what you do, but, you know, I'm no expert in morning routines, but I did find one theme is everybody, like all the successful people, you know, the millionaires, the billionaires, they'll have one, right? So I've been playing around with a morning routine for like years, and it changes like once a month, which I think,
I mean, same dude, same.
Is probably important. And then what I recently like thought of was like a morning routine. Like there's like, I can't just go copy, you know, Warren Buffett's morning routine and find success. It's very like dependent on you and what's going to work for you, right? And it's a trial and error process. So I'll tell you my morning routine and then kind of back into like why it works for me. But it's waking up at, you know, and this just changed. I was going to the gym at 5:30 in the morning before this, and that didn't work for me. So the new morning routine is I'll wake up at 5:30 or 6, one of the two, and I'll go on a barefoot walk for 15 minutes. And I'll usually go walk outside on like rocks, like literally like sharp rocks, and it kind of hurts. But I'm figuring if I do it every day for like long enough, it won't hurt as bad. But I do that, right, for a couple of different reasons. I'm learning about like your circadian rhythm. I used to wake up and just turn the lights on, you know, in the bedroom, turn the lights on upstairs, because I figured like light would wake me up. But I've recently kind of learned, and I'm not, you know, an expert on this, I'm still trying to figure it out, is like, it's really good to wake up with the sunlight. So now I'm like super hyper aware of that. And like, I'm like roaming around my house, like running into walls in the dark.
Yeah.
Like I try to, if I'm going to turn my alarm off in the morning, like I put my phone over here. I'm like, cause I don't want that fake light.
Yeah. The blue light flashing
The blue light before I see the sun. And it's just like really been able to like wake me up and like have me feel more energized. So like all like when I'm walking on rocks, I'll just like look up into the sky, and it's like really cool to like see nature that early and like be more in tune with like the sun rather than like fake lights in my house. That's like been a brand new kind of piece of the morning routine to kick the day off. Like that's the first thing I'll do. And then I'll walk back, I'll make coffee, and then I bring the coffee, and I'm lucky enough to have like a full-time jacuzzi.
Nice.
So I go drink coffee in the jacuzzi, which apparently has some benefits of like loosening up your body, and then the caffeine hits you, and like it's just a great experience. And before, right, waking up at 5:30, it's hard if you're going straight to the gym, right? You know a lot about habits, like what is a habit? There's a trigger, an action, and a reward, right? So to wake up at 5:30 every morning, you know, what's the reward? I got to go freaking to the gym and like go spend 30 minutes trying to warm my body up. And
yeah.
Then I got, you know, I feel good after, but it's hard. It's harder to wake up. So my reward for waking up at 5:30 is, dude, I got to go freaking sit in a jacuzzi and drink coffee in like in the outdoors. Like who doesn't want to wake up to that? So like waking up at 5:30 a.m. has become a breeze. And I work out in the afternoon. but that works for me. And then after that, I, you know, do like some like yoga, or like I do some movement for 20 minutes, eat breakfast, stare at some goals that I wrote down on a piece of paper, shower and go to work. But by then, like, I'm like ready to rock and ready to crush it. But to kind of back up on why that works for me is because I'm like a very tight person, like physically, I'm pretty like mobile, but, I had a back surgery back in November for like a herniated disc, and, you know, I just feel really tight. So that jacuzzi feels so good to me in the morning, right? And that's what I was able to kind of find out is so helpful to me. So it's like little things of like knowing what's good for you, right? Some people might meditate. Some people might journal. Some people might read. You know, all that stuff is great. I just do that at different parts of the day.
Yeah. Anyone listening is like, that is the most Southern California fucking routine I've ever heard. Wakes up barefoot, walks in the rocks, goes to jacuzzi year round, has coffee. No, I love that, dude. Anytime, anyone mentions like what routine do you do or what routine should I do? What, like, at the end of the day, this is the biggest thing I tell people is honestly, just keep trying a whole bunch of different stuff until you find the things that work for you. And don't just try it like once for one day and be like, ah, that didn't work. Sometimes that's going to be the case. You're just going to know it just won't feel right. But like, give it a solid week. And if it doesn't work out, then all right, check. You learned that's not your thing and try something else. But yeah, I love that you wait, like you avoid lights until the sun comes up. That's really interesting. I haven't heard that. Well, I haven't heard like most of your routine, but I love it. It does remind me of this one super random fact. Do you know why pirates wear eye patches?
No.
It's in case if they ever got into a fight and they would have to go under the deck, it would be like from sunlight to pitch black. So they would be able to take off the eye patch and see in the darkness without their lights. Yeah.
They just switch the eye patch.
Exactly. I'm going to have to fact check that. I'm like debating on having a fact check portion at the end of my show because sometimes I say shit and I'm like, I'm almost positive that's right. But like, it could be so off that I really want to double check. Maybe I'll throw that in the show notes. Listeners, let me know.
I say we just roll with it.
Yeah.
They would just roll with it. I can't see a better reason that they'd wear an eye patch. So I like that.
But
maybe I'll start. Maybe I could
start wearing an eye patch. Yeah. How can I incorporate an eye patch? But I actually, like, after that fact, I'm like, this is kind of dorky. But what I do, like, if I ever wake up in the middle of the night or like need the lights early or turn on lights and I know I'm going to have to turn them back on, I legit like cover one eye. And like, I'll do whatever task I had to do. And then I turn the light back off. And then my, like, if I cover my left eye, I'll just switch. And like, I can see totally fine in the night. Like, it's crazy that it actually works. Yeah, this is so random. But
I gotta start doing that too. Who would have thought?
Yeah. So what kind of, you said you've been trying a whole bunch of different things over the years. What are some of the morning routine stuff that you noticed that like really successful people do, but you're just like, I can't do that for the life of me?
I think meditation's a big one. I haven't given it a true shot, man. Like, I don't know. It's like, and that's on me. That's on me. I don't have anything against it because I don't know much about it. And maybe it's because at that stage in the morning, like I kind of like moving around, kind of getting situated, like realizing like what to do with my hands that early in the morning. That's been one of them. I just haven't given a shot, and that's just, you know, me being transparent and open. So I don't know much about it. It's, you know, something I'd be open to, you know, if you're familiar with it, let's talk about it.
Yeah, it's actually that's the first thing I do in the mornings.
Really?
Yeah.
I hear it's like, you gotta like learn it. Like you can't just do it. Like you kind of gotta like be super intentional about it. And like what do you get from it? Like what's your outcome?
Yeah, that's an interesting, I don't know if you have to like learn a proper, I think it is beneficial to kind of understand there's so many different kinds of meditation. Like I would say the kind I do in the morning is not so much, it's very different. Like, let's see, I'm trying to collect the thoughts. What's commonly misunderstood about meditation is that like you hear this practice that it gets brought over to the West and it just kind of gets marketed, basically. It gets marketed and advertised as this like crazy thing that's going to give you superpowers, pretty much. Like you do this and everything turns out better. Everything's well. Like if you meditate frequently, it's the most subtle, like small change, like little difference that it is very helpful, but you don't notice, like it's hard to verbalize. It's just a feeling of calmness in silence. Like how often do you just sit without any noise, like only your thoughts, like no music in the background, no white noise, like how often do you just sit there for a period of time inside your own head?
Just when I'm going to bed.
Yeah, that's meditating. All it is doing that, but focusing on your breathing. That's it. Like all you're thinking is like inhale, exhale. And you just try to only think that the entire time. And then you pay attention to like how your body feels and all that. It gets into that, like that's where it gets more, I guess, intentional. But to me, it's since I have a whole bunch of random racy thoughts, like I just do it so that I can kind of listen to what those thoughts are so that they don't get ahead of me throughout the rest of the day.
So are you intentional about listening to those thoughts then, or are you intentional about having zero thoughts then?
I'm intentional about letting those thoughts be. I'm not listening to them. I'm not like most of the times when I have a thought, I want to attach to it. I want to either play out that thought, see how it goes, or go like, oh, that's a terrible thought. Go away from me. Like I want to do something with that thought. When I meditate, it's me trying to just let that thought appear and then go away naturally, like without me touching it. And it almost kind of has you take a step back in your own head and observe like the train of thoughts that you're having, which is a very odd thing to do, especially in the beginning, but it becomes very relaxing after a while.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have to look into it. I mean, just from like how my brain works, like I don't have a lot of rambling thoughts.
I do. Like, that's all, the like, thing.
Sometimes, yeah. And a lot of people do. And like, I don't know, like I'm really task oriented. So when I wake up, like I almost don't like the one thing I don't like about like a morning routine is I can't just go jump to start doing my task to get finished with the day. Right. So like, I gotta be pretty intentional about, hey, I need this time. But usually I don't have much thought, which might sound like bad, but maybe I'm just naturally like, I don't know. Like I just kind of push all that stuff to the side and kind of try to be present and intentional and, you know, have those feelings, right. Like with your body. But I still think I should try it because I can't really, you know, say I do or don't like something without trying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. At least give it a shot. To me, it's like that and journaling are two really helpful things. The one that I can't skip in the morning is the gym. Like even if I wake up a little later than normal and I don't have full time for the gym, like I'll do a 10 to 15 minute yoga or like I'll do a 30 minute run, something that like kind of cuts that back, but I need some form of movement in the morning to kind of get me going. Cause without that, along with the thoughts, like my body's just way too jittery throughout the day. Like I just have too much energy that is to the point where it's distracting.
Totally. Yeah. I'm the same way. What do they say? Like when the body moves, the mind grooves, like so
like
important.
I've never heard that before.
Do you drink coffee?
Yeah. Drink coffee? Well, I'm more of a tea drinker. Yeah. A tea elitist. No, I really do like coffee. That again, like here goes the importance of getting to know yourself and getting to know how you react to certain things. Like caffeine, tea is great for me. Coffee, like I just grind my jaw. Like it's too, like it gives me a headache. It's just not for me, I guess. But I still do love caffeine. Like I'll drink coffee here and there. So yeah, any advice I could ever give someone on routines, on habits, on anything is just find out what you resonate with and keep doing more of that and then take away the things that you don't resonate with.
Totally. And what makes you feel good and energized for the day, right? Like to go crush your day. Like what's that going to be for you? Could be anything, like literally, which is the fun part about it.
Have you had to remove any habits from your life in order to do what you do? You still vaping?
I vape like occasionally. I use nicotine in moderation, kind of as like a stimulant, like caffeine.
Yeah.
I think, you know, through some research, it does have like some benefits until you're like heavily like addicted to it, especially in like if you're 17 or 18 and listening to us, I'd totally not recommend doing, you know, starting a vape company and vaping.
It's awesome, but get out. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out. Just pull the plug on that. Like earlier, the better. Cause when I started using it, like it's really hard to stop. Luckily it's not like a crazy, you know, it's the most addicting drug, but there's not too many, you know, health benefits if you're using it or health negatives if you're using it in moderation. So, I haven't fully kicked that habit just cause I don't see it too detrimental to like my success and I'm not like smoking cigarettes or anything. but I don't know. I mean, I picked up like when COVID hit and you couldn't go outside. I lived on the beach in Newport, like literally on the beach, and they even closed the beach, right? I picked up good habits. I also picked up bad habits. One of the bad habits was like playing video games because there was just nothing else to do in like free spare time. Like, I couldn't, like, they literally closed the beach
yeah.
For a couple of weeks. And even when the beach was open, I'd go out for half the day. I'd come back, the work was done. Like, what can I do? Play some video games. And then, like, that turned into, like, a habit that was, like, negatively, you know, eventually negative, like, affecting my work. So I really had to, like, just kind of look at that from a high level and scale back and really just use that for, like, leisure hours. But I was, like, hyper aware of, if I'm going to go play video games, that, like, this is opportunity cost of learning something new. And that's okay sometimes, right? Like, you need a mental break, and an escape sometimes from reality, but you just gotta make sure you do it in moderation, right? And leisure time on weekends for an hour or two is fine. But you don't want to be freaking playing video games for your whole life, you know? So, like, just being conscious of that stuff is, you know, that's just one example of something I've, you know, been aware of and made sure not to let it, like, negatively impact, like, my ability to, like, you know, go be a high performer.
What's your game of choice? What was the real problem?
I was playing a lot of Warzone and I got, like, way too good at it.
Yeah. I had another guest come on the show and say the exact same thing. He was like, video games is the thing. And he was like, Warzone, man, that game sucked me in. And I totally agree. I don't know what they do. Dude, I was really big on COD when I was like middle school, high school, even parts of college. I think no, college was more like Fortnite and stuff, but I remember there were oh, and FIFA, God, I played so much FIFA. But there were definitely phases where I, like, the best thing I could have done is when I moved back to San Diego, just get rid of my PlayStation. I don't have it, and like, it doesn't, there's no that temptation, like, it's completely gone. Like, I don't feel the need to play or anything, just because I was like, if this is home, that's probably where I'm gonna just, like, default to boredom. And so now it kind of, like, forced me to do other random stuff.
Yeah. No, as it should. I mean, that's the best way to kick habit, is just remove it, right? And while I was in that habit before, I kind of, you know, I was like, can I make money with this? And it's such an interesting, like, this, like, whole,
really,
like,
is
streamer environment.
Yeah.
Because I was seeing 19-year-olds to, you know, 25-year-olds, or even older, they're literally making, like, 800 to, like, probably, like, $4 or $5 million a year streaming, playing video games. Like, I entertained that and then realized it just wasn't feasible, and that's if you want to dedicate your life to it, and that wasn't something I was willing to do. But I looked, like, really heavily into, like, the business aspect of, like, you know, there were some, like, actual decent businessmen as gamers, and they knew how to grow their brand, and they knew how to build partnerships, and they knew how to manage their money. So I found that really interesting. But it just wasn't, you know, something I want, you know, saw a lot of, like, life value in. I didn't think it would be too happy. You know, it's like, you know, you're an entertainer at that point, but, you know, I'm not really providing a lot of benefit to, you know, a lot of people.
Dude, Twitch is such a fascinating company. Just, like, think about, like, the rise of Twitch. Like, I remember watching YouTube videos of, like, montages in middle school. But now Twitch, it's like, you remember, like, the phase montages back in the day?
Oh yeah.
And now it's like,
they're monetized. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the companies talk about, people who've learned how to monetize. Like, they're actually really good business people, and they now have, like, an entire, like, esports team making so much money, making athlete money off of video games. It's pretty insane.
Oh yeah.
But the, what was I saying? Oh, Twitch, really fascinating, because it takes, like, you are not even playing the video game. You are watching someone playing a game and watching them talk about their experience playing a game. And it's not, like, the cool thing that I saw, the shift of Twitch, was it's not you watching the video or watching the video game. It's you being a part of this community around a person playing that game. Like, you're following the person. The game is just, like, the channel of which that they're talking and, like, interacting with everyone. And that's kind of, like, what draws them all in. But it's crazy that we now have communities around, like, video game stars.
Yeah. I mean, what's also interesting is I have, like, two thoughts. It's like, one, what did that career look like before Twitch? I don't think these guys could make that much money if Twitch didn't exist, you know, if any money at all, besides through, like, partnerships and, like, YouTube videos and ad revenue, right?
Yeah.
Which they probably still could do pretty good, but Twitch, like, blew them up. I mean, like,
yeah,
like, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month, and they turn their computer on and play video games. Part of me is, like, jealous, like a small part of me, right? And then I look at it, I'm like, I don't know if I'd really want to do that, but maybe as a side job, like, that'd be sick, but I'm not going to go build it. So, you know, that's one thing, and I'm blanking on what my second point was on that, but yeah, kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, speaking of hobbies, what is this new hobby that you just given a try? You were teasing it a little earlier, a couple days ago, but I'm really curious. What is the hobby you got going on?
Yeah. So I go through, like, I feel like a lot of people do, right? You go through like phases of different hobbies.
Yeah.
And I try to like align the hobby, and like unintentionally, I guess it probably naturally kind of does this, like align the hobby towards like some sort of like goal, in life. Right. So like I first picked up golf, right. Probably like a lot of others when COVID hit, but the benefit for me with golf was like my clients golf too. Right. So like it's a win-win. One, I get to learn a new sport, and two, I can actually use it on the job. Then, you know, went through a series of hobbies. Most recently, is other than the one I'm about to tell you, is tennis. My friends and I, like, literally got into tennis 3 months ago. We play 3 or 4 times a week. And the parody of life there is, like, I go to the gym and then I play tennis. I'm, like, working out for, like, 3 hours a day. It just feels so good, right? So, like, this parody in fitness and the hobby. So that's awesome. And then the one that I just am taking on, I started it literally yesterday. So hopefully it becomes a hobby. I was in the gym the other day, and there's a trainer in there that I always see. And we just started talking. And he told me, we were talking about like mobility and like how he got super big at one point and realized he was just walking around like this and he didn't feel like he could jump. And I'm like, yes, like, what do you do to like stay, you know, healthy and like mobile? Cause I'm always trying to figure that out. Cause I'm tight, like I said. And he said, check out Animal Flow. Have you heard of
Animal Flow? I've never heard of that. Sounds like yoga, but you try to be an animal.
Yeah. So he like explained it to me as like a dude's version of yoga. And I watched a video on it, and it's kind of like, it's like, it incorporates yoga movements with like handstands, like almost like primal movements, which I thought was super interesting because like before we were sitting at desks all day and we'd actually have to go like hunt for our food, like you were squatting like behind a bush probably like waiting for this deer to come out for like 3 hours, and then you're being chased by like a bear and you're gonna like do somersault. like we were like mobile creatures, right? And it's like a lot of that, and
like,
you know,
this pose is crouching bush, and then this pose is bear on
literally,
fire.
But it's not poses, it's like flows of like things your body like doesn't naturally do, but was designed to
do. This is really interesting.
I watched this video and this guy was going off. I'm like, I can't do any of this. So I found like a beginner flow. I did it for 40 minutes yesterday. And by the end of it, like I could like touch the ground with my legs straight. Like hamstrings were loose, like hips were loose. Like I was just moving like a creature, but like with a yoga style. And it was really hard. So it's like stretching with like a strength corporation, and just full blown like movement. So like, I'm like, I want to explore getting good at like primal movements, which sounds super weird, but when you watch it and kind of figure out like, that's kind of what we are designed to do. It could be pretty sweet.
I'm actually really curious as to what these movements look like. That is the first thing I'm going to do after the show is look up, what is it called again? Animal Flow.
Yeah, Animal I Flow. Can tell you.
Okay. Send links. Send links for the guy. But one thing I really like that you said is that a lot of people have hobbies related to goals in life. I totally agree. I think that like your hobby almost parallels situations in life that you're in. Like what you do in your free time to let go of work. An example I'll have is like the three consistent hobbies that have been in my life is music. I love playing the bass. Motorcycles. I got one about a year ago and I've been riding like pretty frequently. Lately, it's been like every day for the past few months. Ever since I got my new bike, I ride like almost anytime I get the chance to. And then the last one is chess. And I noticed in chess, I have a lot of parallels with the best lesson I've gotten is when I realized I was getting super frustrated by playing chess, like incredibly frustrated. I was in this period of slump. I lost, dude, I'm not even joking, like so many games in a row on the computer. I think it said like 15 or 16 games in a row, like absurd, embarrassing. I was beyond frustrated. And I realized like the reason I was playing chess was a distraction from a project that I just didn't want to do because I felt like I was in a bit of a slump on this project. I felt like I had given it a lot. I hadn't exactly given it my all, but I was in this spot where it's like, what can I do to make this better? How can I better this presentation? Like, I don't know. And I needed some sort of like someone from the outside to help to see it, but I didn't really have like the right resources. And then it kind of hit me. I was like, okay, I'm playing chess as a distraction from that. But there was just some similarities there. Like I have been in the same rating range for about a year now, which is kind of the sign that you need someone from the outside to help you out. You might need a coach, maybe a friend, the right competition, someone like some maybe reading books, videos, like some form of learning thing from the outside. And it was just very interesting to see that how I was using chess as a distraction. Then it turned out to be like a very kind of glaring parallel between my work life and my hobby.
Yeah. So did you say somebody from like the outside, like kind of helped you think strategically about that?
Like with the project or the game?
Yeah. Like that you were using chess as like an escape from putting work on the project, or did you realize that yourself?
Oh no, I realized that. And I haven't even really played chess since. This was about a month or two ago. Yeah. I'm taking a break, dude. That game pissed me off. I'm taking a break.
Go play FIFA or something. No, but I think you bring up a good point. And I didn't even mention that too. Like a lot of like the jumps that I've made have been through having mentors and just being aware that I'm not the smart. Like I feel like I'm behind on where I want to be, which is drives me to push forward, right? In like a lot of aspects of my life. And I leverage outside people who I either look up to or that have done what I want to do. I'll literally send them a LinkedIn note or like DM them and be like, yo, you want to like connect? And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I didn't mention that. And if any of my mentors are listening, thank you.
Yeah. Dude, that's the beauty of sales, is that it really gets you in the habit of just like, if you want to talk to someone, you're there. Like, you know what to do, you know how to outreach, and you know kind of the way, just like if they say no, don't take it personally. Like that's something great that BDR taught me, is your mentors are really not like people that you want to talk to that you think are like so untouchable sometimes, they're really just an email away.
You just got to connect a couple dots and send it like you'd send your friend asking them to go to the movies or like to a baseball game or something like that. And people respond to text or emails that they're used to seeing in that similar language. And it's just about doing it. Like that's the hardest part, is actually just doing it. And a lot of people don't realize that. And then, or they start and then you send the wrong thing and you just adjust it. Like, you know, there's really nothing to lose. And that's why it's so fun. Because you could do it 100 times and lose 80 and have 20 wins. Like, whatever, man.
Yeah, that's 20 more wins than the guy who never tried.
Yeah, it's just math. And that's really what prospecting and sales, and I guess kind of if you look at, you know, any sort of outreach, is it's pretty basic math. And once you know your metrics, you can just repeat it, scale it up or scale it down.
Yeah, totally. I guess from that point on, Ben, I just have a couple closing questions that I like to ask my guests, and then we can be on our merry ways back to work. Quick, so what kind of music do you listen to?
I listen to everything. I recently just got into country.
Nice. Got into country?
Chase Rice, to be specific. And then just some of like the popular country song. I used to hate it, just got into it.
I'm not in the hate it category, but I'm also not in the... Probably won't check it out. I'm gonna be honest. Chase Rice, if you guys like country, check it out. Let me know. Let me know what you think.
You don't have to like it. You just ask the question. You can answer.
I've been trying to like give it. I've given heavy metal a shot. That was a genre that I never really saw myself getting into, and I recently, again, it's one of those things like I wouldn't pick it, but damn, you can appreciate music for what it is in its own right, like. I never would have understood how complex the drums are in heavy metal. Like insane how fast some of these guys can actually do the drums. Appreciate that. Do I love the entire genre? Not really, but I can appreciate it for what it is.
I like how you just kind of like, and I'm kind of the same way, like you'll dive into something that's just like out there that's like kind of overlooked and then realize like there's so much complexity there. Like,
yeah.
Like way beyond like what it just seems. Like that's super cool. I like how you think.
Yeah, I think it's just my natural curiosity. Like even if I know it's not something that will be my favorite in the world, even going into it, if I know it's not my favorite thing normally, I really like to ask myself why. Like, why don't I like it in the first place? And then the second thing I like to ask is, what do I like about this? That's what I learned about heavy metal. Like, the bass sounds really cool and the drums are sick. I'm just not a huge fan of like the intense screaming and guitar. But hey, I figured it out. I learned. And that's a cool trait we share. I like that. What about any TV shows or movies that you would recommend to the listeners?
Top Gun Maverick. That's like my top movie. I've seen it a couple times. Did you watch it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've said it on the show before, but that was one of the first movies in so long where I watched it and I was like, I would definitely pay to see that again. And I did. It was a fantastic movie.
It's so good. I mean, like, just based on how I thought, and I don't know how we're doing on time here, but like when Tom Cruise held the movie during COVID, I don't know if you remember that, he didn't release it. And I was like, okay, there's just too much hype here. Like, I don't know why he's holding it. Like, it's not going to be like game changer. Yeah. And then I saw it and I was like, dude, Tom Cruise made a good move holding it. Like,
it was meant to be in
theaters.
If
they didn't have like box office sales then, like it would, like, I don't want to watch that on like my TV at home. I want to watch that in theater.
Yeah. Totally agree. The other thing is, that is a textbook example of how you should do the sequel. Oh my God. They balanced out the right amount of like bringing back old stuff, but like they didn't make it cheesy. Like they didn't overdo it. And then they like teased, oh, in the commercials, Goose's son is so pissed at Maverick. You're like, oh my God, he's just going to be mad because he killed his dad and all that. And it turns out that wasn't even the fight. They had like a whole different other reason in the plot. And I was like, that was really good on the writers that, like, I was going into the movie already thinking, like, wow, he's just going to be mad because his dad died. And they're going to have, like, this bro moment where you realize it was an accident. But, like, no, that was not at all what was going on. So I thought that was, like, a really good pump fake from the, like, media team there.
Yeah, that was awesome. Their contract with, was it the Department of Defense to use real F-18s was sick.
Yeah.
Like, they could have done all that via CGI, and, like, it wouldn't have hit different. So, like, we finished the movie at, like, 12:30 in the morning, and I just left fired up. So, I'm, like, researching, like, what 10Gs feels like, all this shit. Like, I was stoked. Like,
you're researching like naval Air Force air applications. Like,
Yep. And, I mean, that was probably, like, you know, everybody listening to this probably would be like, oh, well, you know, I've seen it. Or, like, well, now you got to go see it. A comedy TV show. I don't know if you've seen it. You got to have like the right comedic thought process, but Nathan For You is pretty funny.
Right. Yeah. I've actually like recently saw it for the first time. I've been hearing about it, but I recently saw not Nathan For You, but I heard, or I saw
The Rehearsal.
Yes. The Rehearsal. Dude, nuts. Absolutely nuts. Like crazy. But also I saw him recently go on a talk show as well. And, His flavor of comedy is really funny. Like, it's interesting. It makes you think, but it's also, like, secretly really funny.
Yeah, but for the entrepreneurs, like, business-minded folks, like, the Nathan For You, he'll actually take a business idea. Like, that's the whole plot of Nathan For You. And just make it so absurd that it's comical. Like, he made a dumb Starbucks, which actually blew up on... like it literally went viral. His dumb Starbucks. He copied Starbucks everything. It was called Dumb Starbucks. Blew up, went viral, and then he got sued by Starbucks. Stuff like that. How to beat traffic by having two interns follow you on a motorcycle. When you hit traffic, you hop out of the car, the intern hops in, and you get off to work. Like funny, like business ideas, like that just fit like right with our MOs that we would never
do. Yeah, that's sweet. I actually really want it. Is it on HBO?
Ooh, I don't. I think it's on HBO Max. I think.
Okay, because I know the rehearsal's on.
And then he got shut down. Nathan For You got shut down. I think he got canceled. It was on. I think it was like Nickelodeon or something originally, and then the show got canceled. And then he started The Rehearsal, which is just a mind fuck of itself.
Yeah. What kind of books are you reading?
I'm reading right now The Power of One More by Ed Milet. I don't know if you follow Ed.
I've listened to a couple of his podcasts,
Yeah, I listen to him all the time. He came out with a book. The last sales book I read was a Challenger Sale, and then I'm about to read Predicting Revenue. More sales-focused books, just to keep learning that trade. I don't kind of want to be a master of that before. You know, I don't read too much, you know, what are those books? You know, what's that category? I'm blanking. It's escaping my mind.
Like self-help?
Like
or business?
Yeah, that's like mostly what I read, is that kind of stuff. Not so much like Game of Thrones, you have a book, like stuff like
fiction?
That.
Not so much fiction.
Fiction. Why did that escape my mind? It's 3 o'clock. 2:30,
yeah, 2:30 feeling, man.
Yeah, so I don't read too much fiction. Mostly just like, how can I continue to improve in, you know, various aspects of my life, and what can I learn from other, you know, smart people?
Yeah, totally agree. Where can people find you?
Orange County. For some coffee.
Orange County.
No, I'm on I don't know. I don't post too much on, you know, online. I'd say like follow me on Instagram, Ben Heyman, literally Ben - Heyman, and then Twitter and LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably where I'm most active.
Sweet. Sounds good. Ben, thanks again for coming on, and excited to see what you got coming next.
Yeah. Thanks, Armand. Thanks for having me on the show. Looking forward to keeping connected and seeing what we can do together.
Yep. See you later.